Today's scripture is Mark chapter 5, verse 1 to 20. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with the chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had strength to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs. Let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him, and he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you, and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled.
The 1840s, really some of the most prestigious hospitals across Europe, had a devastating phenomenon happen. Pregnant women who were healthy would go to the hospital to deliver a child. After delivery, they would soon contract a high fever and then die shortly afterwards. This went on, one in every six women would die from this for about 10 years, until a doctor kind of made a correlation between the doctors that went straight from the autopsy room to the delivery room. It would be about 20 more years until the medical community really acknowledged and accepted what we today know as germ theory. But that's exactly what was taking place. The doctors were taking these unseen viruses from the autopsy table into the delivery room, and these unseen germs were attacking women and killing them. I mean, we're surrounded by the unseen, right? From viruses to tiny dust particles, and as we've learned in 2020. The unseen can have devastating effect on us. Well, the Bible also talks about unseen things that have devastating effect on us. Not viruses, not dust particles, but personal, powerful forces of evil that seeks to destroy humanity. The Bible calls them demons. And sometimes when we hear the word demons, we think of maybe, you know, a Hollywood movie. That's not the presentation of the Bible, but the Bible does present it as real, not a joke, not something to be played with or laughed at. In fact, Ephesians 6 says, "We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic power over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." And so today, Mark 5, we encounter a powerful personal force of evil on an individual. And those forces of evil are still in the world today, and they seek to do harm to every one of us, believer or non-believer. But maybe I should give a warning before we get too far into the passage today, because there's a huge danger, even in Christendom, where we can fall on one side or the other in the spiritual realm. C.S. Lewis gives us a really good word of warning. "There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One's to disbelieve in their existence." Oh, yeah, you know, they're not really real. And even as Christians, maybe mentally we believe, but as we live our life, practically we don't really believe in demons. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. And the devils themselves, they're equally pleased by both errors. And they hail a materialist or a magician with the same delight. Now, the Bible talks plainly about demons. It acknowledges their existence, but the Bible does not obsess about demons. And the Bible obsesses about Jesus. And we're going to find that these demons, when they encounter Jesus, they're going to obsess about him as well. And so we want to keep that in mind as we go into the passage today, as we look at the forces of evil that we can't see, that's here and real and present. What we really want to focus on is, who is Jesus in light of these unseen realities? And the claim this morning, remember, we're going through Mark, the miracles are Mark. There's a claim followed by a miracle, and the miracle is giving testimony that Jesus is who the claim says he is. So the claim's found in verse 7. Jesus is the Son of the Most High God. Most High. That's a very simple but powerful claim. There's none greater than Jesus. There's none more powerful than Jesus. There's none with more authority than Jesus. There's none over Jesus. There's none that Jesus has to ask permission, get permission from to do anything. There's no one, even all the forces of darkness put together, that can overpower Jesus. None that can defeat or destroy Jesus. He's not only going to win the war, but Jesus will win every battle that he engages in. And so as we look at the forces of evil in our world, we want to say, what is the power of Jesus in the realm that we can't see? First, I want you to notice that Jesus isn't afraid to enter into enemy territory. I wonder, like the soldiers on D-Day when they were going into Normandy, they're on the ships, they're about to land on the beach. Like, how did they feel in those moments leading up to that? I mean, they know the enemy's there. They know the enemy has buried in. They're ready for battle. They know that they've put up barbed wire and landmines, and there are artillery shells that's going to bombard them and submachine guns. I mean, they know that when they get to the beach, they're not going to be welcomed with a welcome party. Oh, hey, guys, welcome here. Here's some food. Let's sit down and talk it out. No, this is war. And that's exactly the picture here in Matthew 5. Jesus is in a boat. He's crossing the sea. He's about to land on the beach, entering enemy territory. The text says that these demons look and they see Jesus while he's a long ways off. This is a battle that's about to take place. Jesus is entering enemy territory. And Mark describes this scene through a series of terms or ideas that relate around the concept of unclean. He'll use that word a couple of times, but he'll give lots of objects that are really unclean. And in the Old Testament, unclean things were meant to be avoided. Don't touch it. Don't get near it. Don't even talk about unclean things. And so as Mark works his way through all of these unclean things, it's almost like a big warning sign that says, danger, stay out. But what we see is that Jesus actually goes in where no one else would dare to enter. He's among unclean people. Verse 1, they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And this is a region, we have a map you can look at. It's a region known as the Decapolis. It's a group of 10 cities. So Jesus is on the west side of the Jordan River, the left side of the Lake of Gennesaret or the Sea of Tiberias. And he's crossing over onto the east side. The west side, this is where all the Jews are at. The east side over here on the Decapolis, this is where all the Gentiles are at. Jews typically didn't like to be around Gentiles. It's dangerous. Lots of unclean things there. Lots of bad things going on there. Let's stay away. I mean, no good rabbi would have cross that lake to go to the Decapolis. There's no good reason to be here. And certainly no good rabbi would have carried his students. Hey, get in the boat. Let's go over to this region. Are you crazy, Jesus? Why in the world would we ever go here? But just like Jesus in John 4, who had need to go to the woman in Samaria, Jesus has need to enter the boat with his disciples to go to this region where people are being tormented by unseen forces of evil. He enters their realm. That's who Jesus is. And you know, there's, when you think about it, there's a lot of churches today that would probably fit right in with first century rabbis. Let's just stay on the west side or east side over here. Let's stay in our little corner. Let's stay in our synagogues. Let's not get out there in the dangerous world. There's unclean stuff out there that could affect us. It's safe here. Jesus wouldn't have anything to do with that. Jesus says, let's go into the darkness. I've come to be with sinners. I've come to bring light into the darkness. That's where the church should be today. Just this past week, this past Sunday, I went to a bar to watch a football match. I sometimes go to this bar. Every time I go to this bar, I mean, just to be honest with you, I feel like a fish out of water. I just being honest, like they're not my people group. You know, the language they use is vastly different from the language that I use. The conversations, the topics of conversation that they have. I mean, it's just like, you know, I want to cover my ears. I feel like getting dirty just listening to some of the things that I don't have those conversations in my home and with my children. That those aren't topics that we celebrate. It's topics we condemn. And it's uncomfortable being there. But that's exactly where the church is supposed to be. That's exactly where Jesus goes, and Jesus carries his disciples to be in those places. He's not said, play it safe, church. Let's stay here all together where we're going to stay clean. He says, go out there into the world and be a light in the darkness. That's who Jesus is. He attacks these forces of evil. It's among unclean people. And the story, as it progresses, it just gets worse. It's an unclean place. And I don't just mean the 10-city region, but listen to what the text says. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs, graveyard, a cemetery, dead people. Now, this, you know, could be a really good opener for a nice horror movie, all right? This, ooh, spooky, scary. Right? This Mark didn't put this in here, so it has a good rating on IMDb. He's put this in here for a very specific reason, to point out it's an unclean man living in an unclean place. Dead people make you unclean, and he's living among dead people. Numbers 19, whoever touches a dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. 7-day quarantine if you touch anything dead. You don't want that, right? You want to avoid that. We don't like quarantine. Who would want to be near this guy? When someone dies in a tent, you don't even have to touch the dead guy. If you're everyone who comes into the tent, everyone who was in the tent, unclean. 7 days. Stay away from him, right? And whatever the unclean person touches, you don't even have to touch the guy. You don't have to be in the same room with him. But if he touches a cell phone and later you pick up that same cell phone, whatever he touches will be unclean. And anyone who touches it shall be unclean until evening. I mean, things go from bad to worse. He's not just among Gentiles, but he's among a Gentile who lives among dead people. You know, the past year with COVID, if you're ever in a public space and someone starts to cough, what do you notice? I promise it's not COVID. Doesn't matter. You don't want to be near that guy. Jews did not want to be near dead bodies, and they certainly didn't want to be near people that were living among dead bodies. And yet Jesus intentionally, I mean, he gets in the boat and goes to this region just to meet this man. After his conversation and conversion of this man, he gets in the boat and he goes back home. That's the only reason he goes over there, is to meet this really unclean person that's living among unclean dead people. Because Jesus comes to fellowship with people that no one else wants to fellowship with. Jesus, there are no untouchables with Jesus. He intentionally goes near people that others avoid. Corrupt officials, Jesus was all around about hanging out with those people. The sexually promiscuous, he's inviting them in. Come sit at my table. He got into a lot of trouble for doing that. The non-religious, the people that are against God, he's inviting them in as well. The diseased, I mean, like serious diseases that they got to walk around saying, unclean, unclean. They can't be near people. Jesus is intentionally going to these people, the demonized, the poor, the needy. This is the situation that Jesus finds himself in. And he's in this situation because he's chosen it. He's chosen to confront the forces of evil that we can't see, to care for people. Unclean people, unclean place, and it just gets worse. Unclean pigs. Verse 11, there was a great herd, 2,000. A great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. Now, pigs, they're only one of a number of unclean animals. There's a lot of unclean animals in the Old Testament that you're supposed to avoid. Don't get near, don't touch, don't eat. Pigs are just one of them. But in the first century where Jesus is living, pigs are the top of the list. These are the worst type of unclean animals that you don't want anything to do with. 167 BC, Antiochus Epiphanes enters into the temple in Jerusalem with a pig, the holy temple of God, and he places that pig on the altar and sacrifices this unclean animal on God's altar. And then, in order for you to show loyalty to Antiochus Epiphanes, to the Jews, he said, you've got to eat pork. or die. These guys hated pigs by the first century. And this is the situation that Jesus finds himself in. I mean, a place, a people, a situation that everybody else would avoid. And Jesus is intentionally avoid this like the plague. And Jesus is going there. Why? Because he's not afraid. Jesus isn't afraid of the dark forces. He's not afraid of the evil that's in our world. You know, I mean, science 101 says that the unclean affects the clean rather than the clean affecting the unclean. You got a person that's sick with COVID, and you got a person that's not sick with COVID, and you put them in the same room, and the clean person, the person that doesn't have COVID, his healthiness isn't going to rub off on the person with COVID. But most likely, the person with COVID is unhealthy, is going to rub off on the healthy person, and that'll infect him. That's the rule of thumb in all of the Old Testament, right? You touch a dead body, even though you're clean, you don't make the dead body clean, you become unclean. You touch a leper, even though you're clean, you don't make the leper clean, no, you become unclean. You touch a pig, you become unclean, it doesn't become clean. There's one exception to the rule. Exodus 29, the altar shall be most holy. Whatever touches the altar shall become holy. And you remember the claim last week? The claim last week about Jesus. You are the Holy One of God. You see why Jesus isn't afraid to go to the Decapolis? You see why he's not afraid to be around the man who lives in the tombs? You see why he's not afraid to be around 2,000 pigs? Because the world doesn't affect Jesus. Jesus affects the world. And whatever he touches, he transforms. Do you believe that? Do you believe, really, really believe that? Whatever Jesus touches in your life, he transforms. Do you believe that about the sin in your life? He transforms it. Do you believe that about the desires in your life? He transforms it. Do you believe it about your marriage that seems to be falling apart, that when Jesus touches it, he can transform it? Do you believe it about your children that have wandered away from the Lord? They want nothing to do with him, that whatever Jesus touches, he transforms. He ventures to go where no one else dares to go. And you think of our city. And we live in a city that there are dark, demonic, destructive strongholds of Satan. Places where no one would venture to go. There are brothels that unseen forces of evil are bringing oppression in that place. There are temples around this city. Visitors, when they come to the city, it's like one of the top 10 places to go visit. Temples where demons are worshipped. That's what they're unknowingly, they're worshiping demons. This is a dark place. There are bars and clubs where when you go there, the unseen forces of evil are seeking to take away the image of God that he's put in you. There are certain workplaces. Maybe you feel it when you go to your workplace tomorrow. It feels dark to you. There's unethical practices going on that you know is there. There's oppression going on. There's deceptive practices that thrive in your workplace. It's dark, and you don't want to go there. Homes around this city where the unseen forces of evil are working havoc in homes, in your own apartment complexes, maybe in your own home, right? I mean, evil practices masterminded by Satan, domestic abuse, pornographic entertainment, heated arguments between spouses or a parent and a child, that they're cutting one another with words that cuts much deeper than a sword could ever cut and takes much longer to heal. Our own hearts, dark places, hiding sin, pride, unforgiveness, resentfulness, bitterness. And Jesus, as he got into the boat and he went to the places no one else ventured to go, he's in the boat today. And he's venturing in all of those places. He's venturing in the dark parts of this city. He's venturing in the apartments that no one else wants to go to. He's venturing in our hearts that we seek to close off from him. He's not afraid of the enemy. And he goes with you. Wherever you go, he's with you in the darkness. I guess I should mention one more unclean thing that Jesus encounters. That's the unclean spirits, verse 2. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there he met out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. Jesus isn't just entering enemy territory, but he's encountering enemy power. And what power we see in this passage. No one could bind him anymore. Not even with a chain, for he'd often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. My name is Legion, for we are many. Make a few observations about the enemy that Jesus encountered. First, did you notice the repetition of no one? No one. No one. This is a hopeless situation, it seems like, for this man. No one could subdue him. No one could overpower him. No one was strong enough to take care of the unseen forces of evil that was going on in this man's life. Did you notice that they tried other means? Not just physical means, but if we humans aren't strong enough, let's go outside of humanity. Let's use shackles and chains. But even that wasn't enough to subdue this unseen force of evil. It seems like nothing on the planet, human or otherwise, can solve the problem this man has found himself in. His torment day after day. There's no solution for it, so it seems. Did you notice his name? We are Legion, for we are many. Legion, up to 6,000 Roman soldiers. How many demons were in this man? I don't know, but a lot. I know this, there are 2,000 pigs that they went into. I know this, that the demons themselves says, we are many. And I want you to think of this, the power of one demon. Think of the power of one demon. Psalm 106 says, the power of one demon is enough to convince an entire nation for their parents to continually, day after day, sacrifice their children to demons. It's the power of one demon. Power of one demon in 1 Chronicles 21 is enough to bring pride in David to order a census that will cause 70,000 people to die. The power of one demon. James 3, the power of one demon is enough to cause a war in your home between a husband and wife, between roommates. Power of one demon. Revelation 16, the power of one demon is enough to cause nations to go to war against each other. You read the Gospels, the power of one demon is to cause muteness in people, blindness in people, physical deformity in people, seizures so that they would throw themselves into a fire or water to torment them, to kill them. One demon in Acts chapter 19 is powerful enough. One demon, powerful enough to overpower 7 grown, strong men, beat them up, strip them of their clothes, and they're running for their lives. And here we have a legion of demons. What's going to happen? Is Jesus strong enough to overcome these forces of evil? Well, if we're like the man, we may feel like no. If we're like the man, we may feel like I've tried everything, people and otherwise, and there's no hope for me. And you may feel like this man. You may feel like some sin has grabbed a hold of you and it won't let go and you can't get free. You may feel like depression has come upon you and it won't lift. You may feel that you have out of control anger. You can't get rid of it. Out of control emotions. You can't control how you respond in situations. Out of control actions. Out of control people that are surrounding your life. Out of control decisions. You can't seem to keep making the right decision. Have you met a foe that you can't defeat? You said, I've tried counselors, I've tried pastors, I've tried friendships and community and church, I've tried small group, I've tried 12-step programs and 6-step programs, I've tried medicine and doctors and drugs and journals and yoga and exercise and acupuncture and TCM. I mean, you name it, I've tried it all. Are the forces of evil that surround you, are they greater than Jesus? The one who is in the world, is he greater than the one who is in you? Well, when you keep reading the story, you find absolutely not. That Jesus is strong enough to overcome every enemy we will ever encounter. He exhibits his supremacy in this story. I want you to just listen to the power of Jesus over demons. And when the demon saw Jesus from afar, the demon that no one could control, legion of demons, he ran and fell down before Jesus. And he cries out with a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Son of the Most High God? Oh, God, Jesus, please don't torment me." He begged him. Earnestly, don't send us out of the country. He begged him, send us into the pigs. Give us permission to go into the pigs. So Jesus gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs. And the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea. And they were drowned in the sea. You know, perhaps the greatest battle of modern history took place June 6, 1944, storming of Normandy on D-Day. And when the Allied forces encountered, when they prepared to encounter the enemy forces, they came well armed. 12 nations coming up against one. They're armed for battle. 5,000 landing and assault crafts, 289 escort vehicles, 277 minesweepers, 156,000 troops. Later that day, by the end of it, there would be 300,000 troops landed by sea and by air. 54,000 vehicles transported across the sea onto the beach. 104,000 tons of supplies that they would bring in to fight the enemy. 11,000 armed aircraft for bombing and for defense, 5 battleships, 20 cruisers, 65 destroyers, 1,000 naval combat ships, 29 tanks. The Normandy landings were the largest seaborne invasion in history. They're like, we know the enemy and we're coming fully armed. And here is Jesus on a boat about to land on the beach for a battle that's greater than the storming of Normandy. He's meeting a foe that's greater than Hitler and all of his armies. And what does Jesus bring with him? Not much. He's got 12 disciples. They're kind of a liability. Stay in the boat, guys. I mean, that's how it says they came to the other side. They. And then we lose the disciples. They're not even mentioned again. Until the next story where they're asking Jesus a stupid question. What do you mean, who touched your garments? There's so many people here. They're gone from the story. What does Jesus bring? He brings clubs, swords, guns, an army, the power of his word. It's all he needs against a legion of demons, against the enemy. He just steps onto the beach. And they're cowering before him. You see that? The legion of demons bow before Jesus. These legion that nobody could control. Jesus just steps on the beach and they ran and fell down before Jesus. That's an interesting word. They fell down. Proskuno. It's the Greek word that we most often translate worship. To fall in worship. Now, they're not freely worshiping Jesus. They're not people that are saying, oh, we praise you and we love you. But when you get in the presence of Jesus, and when you know who he is, there's no other option but to fall down and worship before the Son of the Most High God. I have a friend that once met the Queen of England. was a long line of people that had to be paraded in front of her. And on the way, they were given instructions on how to meet royalty, right? This is the crown. So men, you've got to bow before the queen. Women, you need to curtsy before the queen. And my friend happened to be next to this lady that was like, curtsy? I don't curtsy to anybody, queen or not. I'm not going to do that. And, you know, they keep getting closer to the queen, and she's just complaining the whole time. I'm not going to do it, not going to do it. And then she gets in front of the queen, and guess what she does? She curtsies. Because in the presence of royalty, that was the proper response. And it was just the natural response. With 10 million times more, when you get in the real presence of Jesus, that will be the natural response for everyone who's ever lived. And the demons are a reminder for us that we can fight against Jesus as he seeks to save us and he seeks to sanctify us, but one day we will bow before him. Philippians 2. At the name of Jesus, every knee should bow, every in heaven and under heaven, and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Jesus wants you to bow now as you take refuge in him and he protects you from the forces of evil in the world, rather than bow later as you're sent away from him to suffer with those forces for all eternity. He says, choose now to come before me and worship. The legion of demons, they're begging Jesus, verse 10, and the demons begged him. I mean, here's this great, mighty, powerful army of demons, and they're cowering before one man. But he's no ordinary man. He's the Son of the Most High God, the Holy One of God. The fighting hasn't even begun. Jesus just stepped out onto the beach, and they're waving the white flag. I surrender! I give up! That's the power of Jesus over all the forces of evil that come against you and against me. Notice the begging. Don't torment us. They're begging him. Don't send us out of the country. They beg him, please send us into the pigs. Did you catch that? They can't even possess pigs without the permission of Jesus. That's how much Jesus is in control of all the forces of evil that are put together. James 2:19 says the demons believe in God and they shudder before him. I'll tell you an interesting story. A couple of weeks ago, my wife woke me up at 4:30 a.m. Did you hear that? I honestly thought she was talking about my snoring. I snore really loud, but not loud enough to wake myself up. No, I didn't hear it. Did you see that? I see my eyelids, the back of them, right? That's all I see. There's something in here, in our room. I said, you're dreaming. You just had a nightmare. Go back to sleep. And then I heard something. And I kind of saw this dark figure flying over our bed. Well, make a long story short, it was a bat. A bat had gotten into our bedroom. It was flying over our bed. And we eventually, you know, I sent Jenny out of the room, and I got the bat to go out of a window. All was fine. Nobody got bit. No one's a vampire. It was 4:30 a.m., so we went back to sleep, right? And later that day, when we were both lucid and awake, she told me the full story. She said, you know, I woke up earlier, you know, like 3 a.m. I was like, I felt like there was something in this room, and I didn't know what it was. And she said, I just assumed it was a demon. That's not a crazy assumption, because, I mean, our family has actually had several encounters where we've been woken up in our bedroom to demons. And you know what she did when she woke up the first time? She prayed a prayer to Jesus, and she went back to sleep. It was when she realized it was a bat that she woke me up. She's more afraid of a bat than she is a demon. Because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. And if you are in Christ, there is no reason whatsoever to fear the forces of evil that seek to wreak havoc in your life. He is supreme over all of them put together. Have no fear, but take refuge in Him. And we see the power of change as we come to Jesus. And this man who had a legion of demons in him comes before Jesus. And when Jesus extends his mercy, he is completely transformed. Verse 19, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you, how he has had mercy on you. December 2020, a homeless man walks into a barber shop that also happens to be a men's clothing shop. He wants to borrow some scissors to trim his beard. The owner says, I'll do something better. Sit down here. I'm going to give you some food. I'm going to give you a clean shave. I'm going to give you a haircut. I'm going to give you some new clothes. I'm going to let you take a bath. And you can see the photo of the before and after picture. Total transformation. That's Mark 5. There's a transformation of the before and after picture of the man who was possessed by demons. And this, he didn't do anything, but he just came in. Sit down. Let the person do it all. It's all at the other person's expense. And Jesus says, I'm going to do it all for you. It's all at my expense. You don't have to do anything. Just come down and enjoy what I'm about to do for you. Jesus transforms everything that he touches. The man was separated from friends and family, living among dead people. He couldn't be near them. But after an encounter with Jesus, what happens? Go back home to your friends. Go back home to your family. That's the power of Jesus that can be applied to your life today. This demon-possessed man had him acting like, the demons had him acting like a maniac. He was out of control, breaking chains, running around. He was uncontrolled, uncontrolled living. And after an encounter with Jesus, he's sitting calm in his right mind. That's the power of Jesus that can be applied to your out-of-control living today. The demon, he caused tremendous pain to this man. You see, he's crying out day and night. He's taking stones and he's cutting himself. That's not a new phenomenon, cutting. It's first century. It's even before that. Elijah, when he's having the big battle with Baals, those prophets of Baal, they're cutting themselves. It's an ancient practice that oftentimes is the unseen forces of evil that seeks to bring havoc on people that are created in God's image. And after an encounter with Jesus, there's no crying out. There's no more cutting. He's been completely transformed. He's gone from being naked to being completely clothed. He's gone from being a mercenary to being a missionary. He was a havoc to society. Why did they try to chain him? Because he was destroying everything. He was a problem to everybody. Chain him up. He's just because hurt people hurt others. And afterwards, what do we see? After he encounters Jesus, he's going out into the Decapolis, a 10-city region, and Jesus says, go bring healing to the world. And that's what you see taking place here. I think of our 1,000 gospel conversations, and we want to have 1,000 gospel conversations in this city. I say, well, what do I say? How do I begin? I don't think it's any more simple than this. Jesus says, tell what I've done for you. That's what he says. He went away and he began to proclaim. Tell them how much the Lord has done for you. And tell them how much Jesus had mercy on you. Show them the before and after picture of your life with Jesus. That's the beginning of a gospel conversation. And look at the effect of that conversation. At the end or the middle of chapter 5, at the end of this story, the people of the Decapolis, they've come to Jesus and they're afraid. They don't want anything to do with Jesus. They're begging Jesus, leave this place. Go away. Two chapters later, after this formerly demon-possessed man has had his 1,000 gospel conversations in this 10-city region, the same people that were begging Jesus to leave. Two chapters later, when Jesus comes back to the Decapolis, Jesus returned to the region of the Decapolis, Mark 7, and they brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment, and they begged him to lay his hands on them. They're begging Jesus before the man gave his testimony. Go away, Jesus. And after the man goes around and gives his testimony, they're saying, Jesus, come here. Jesus, come here. And it says that he took them from the crowd. There's a crowd of people now. A region they were sending Jesus away, there's a crowd flocking to Jesus now. The power of one transformed life that goes out and gives testimony to Jesus. We'll end by looking at the begging that takes place in this story. The demons beg Jesus, go away. The people in the city in Mark 5, they beg Jesus, go away. The man who has been changed by Jesus begs to go with Jesus. Don't send me away from you. Because you realize when you really encounter Jesus, when you really listen to what he has to say, his real teaching, there's only two options. You either completely reject him, go away. Or when you really understand Jesus, there's only two options. Go away. Or, please let me stay. I want to be with you forever. And the power of forces of evil that are here in this room today, in our city today, Jesus seeks to work for your good against them. He seeks to bring you into his arms for protection. He's asking you, what choice are you making today? Are you saying stubbornly, staying in your own sin, go away? Or are you saying in surrender, come and be what I can't be and what my family can't be and what my pastor can't be and what medicine can't be and what counseling can't be. Be what only you can be. Transform me today.